It is 4:36 on the Mike McFeely Show on the mighty 790 KFGO, and 4:36 on Mondays nearly qualifies as my favorite time of the week because I get to chat with my good friend Clay Jenkinson, director of the Dakota Institute, a scholar, a man of letters, a world traveler, and a pretty darn nice guy. And I want to welcome Clay Jenkins to the program today. Hello, Clay. How are you?
Well, this is surely one of the favorite parts of my week. I always love talking with you. The sun is low in the sky here in Bismarck. It's clear skies. And tomorrow we begin the great JFK Symposium in Bismarck State.
Before we get to that, a caller called in and asked whether there was any crayfish anywhere to be had in Fargo-Moorhead, or crawfish, as he termed it. We did have a couple of phone calls come in saying that the Cajun Cafe in Fargo does indeed serve crawfish. So as a full-service radio host, I wanted to let the listeners know that you can indeed get crawfish in Fargo, North Dakota. Have you ever eaten crayfish before,
Clay? I have, not in Fargo.
Please say New Orleans or Baton Rouge or someplace like that.
It was down there in the Gulf Coast in Florida and in New Orleans.
What does it taste like?
Yeah, you know, it tastes good. It's seafood. You know, they're basically the same taste. It's not what I would first order. Prawns. You know, that's the thing to order when you're in the Gulf Coast.
The big super jumbo shrimp.
Yeah,
like nuclear.
Those prawns that are the size of a small lobster. And you just think, wow. You know,
things.
You buy shrimp here, and it's been grown in a garden somewhere in Thailand and frozen seven times, and the taste is not what it should be.
Okay, your big symposium starts tomorrow at BSC, Bismarck State College. It's the JFK Symposium. It is going to be a wonderful time. Professional reasons will not allow me to be in Bismarck.
I hate that.
I know. I was so excited to get out there tomorrow and do my show to preview the symposium. It's just sadly not going to work. But fill us in, Clay. Use this time to get people excited about the JFK Symposium.
Well, the big opening event, the keynote tomorrow night with Clint Hill, the man who was on the limousine trying to save Jacqueline Kennedy's life on that awful day. That's sold out. We have more than 600 people coming tomorrow night to hear Clint Hill, who's a Washburn native. And then beginning on Wednesday, we have two full days, Mike, of the most amazing people. I've just been sitting here going through the introductions, and it's just extraordinary. H.W. Brands, one of the great historians of our time, a presidential biographer, he's coming. Harrison Schmitt, I get to meet tonight, the second to last man who ever stood on the moon, and have dinner with him. I mean, tomorrow I get to squire him around Bismarck. 12 people have been on the moon. 8 of them are still alive. Harrison Schmitt was the only geologist, the only scientist, and he's going to be here in Bismarck. Lori Fenner of the 9/11 Commission is coming to talk about the Warren Commission as a controversial moment in American official investigation and history. Julia Ernst from UND Law is coming to talk about the exact moment when LBJ became the 36th president of the United States. Randall Kennedy from Harvard, a friend of mine from Oxford, is coming to talk about JFK and civil rights. It just goes on and on, and then it culminates on Thursday night with the Bismarck Mandan Symphony performing music inspired by Kennedy, written about Kennedy, and an original piece that she commissioned for this symposium.
And of course, we're doing this, or you're doing this, and Bismarck State College is doing this because this year, November 22nd, is the 50th anniversary, November 2nd, 1963, of John F. Kennedy's assassination in Dallas, Texas. Does this still have relevance to today? And I know my answer is a resounding yes, but we've had some people call in and sent us emails saying, why in the heck are you talking about JFK, Mike? Who cares in the year 2013 about a president who's been dead for 50 years? Why is he relevant? Why is this moment in our history, Clay, relevant 50 years later?
Well, that puts me in a bad spot. I spend my time working on Thomas Jefferson. So if they're already bored by 50 years, how do they feel about 250 years? Really, are we that presentist that Kennedy no longer matters? You know, I'll give you this much. He's overrated as a president. He died young. That led to a mythology that was created in part by Jacqueline Kennedy and by Robert Kennedy and the country that was grieving. And that mythology has made him one of the most popular former presidents in American history, and his glamour still sort of lives on in the American soul. But as a historian, I would say that he's dramatically overrated as a president. On the other hand, Mike, he saved the world between October 14th and 28th, 1962. In the Cuban Missile Crisis, he and Nikita Khrushchev together backed away from the nuclear precipice when their military-industrial goons were pressing them, browbeating them, demanding that we go nuclear, and those two leaders, Premier Khrushchev and the young John F. Kennedy, stood up to the military-industrial complex and saved the world. Between 30 and 300 million would have been killed if they had followed the advice of Curtis LeMay and the generals in the Kremlin.
Well, and aside from that historical note, which is incredibly important to our future and our present right now, he was also a sitting president who was assassinated in a very public way, the first president ever assassinated in that manner with films and TV and mass media the way it was even in 1963. And it changed our nation. It changed everything, the way we do our business, the way we protect our politicians, our famous people, the way we go about our daily business, Clay. It was a seminal few seconds in American history.
It did. You know, the Secret Service was not very well equipped. Nobody would be allowed to go through a downtown high-rise area today in an open convertible. They were shocked by what happened. They were, frankly, underprepared. Clint Hill talks about that in his book. He has a second one out now, 5 days in November. You know, Kennedy created the Peace Corps. More than 200,000 Americans have participated in it. It's one of our best things that we do in the international scene. He sent us to the moon. We wouldn't have gone to the moon without John F. Kennedy, because we did it in large part to honor him after his martyrdom, but it was an impossible timetable, and we accomplished it not because we could in a rational way, but because we felt we had to fulfill the promise that he had made in March 25th of 1961. He's a very important president, whether you like him or not. And conservatives, Mike, people who might think, oh gosh, there they go, loving the Kennedys. Conservatives should love JFK. He was a hardline, you know, cold warrior. He wanted the tax cut, and Ronald Reagan borrowed that very tax cut idea when he was president of the United States. Kennedy was no leftist. He was not as liberal as either of his brothers.
Oh, it wasn't even close, right? I mean,
no.
John Kennedy today might even be deemed as a Republican. In today's odd political mix, he'd be a moderate Republican or a very, very middle-of-the-road blue dog Democrat.
Of course, he would have evolved with the country, as I think his brothers did. But in his time, he was a very conservative Democrat, and his tax cut became the orthodoxy for Reagan Republicans and remains so.
He was also a very, very flawed man. And I don't know if it makes him... The history we know about him, and certainly what we think we know about him, whether he's more flawed than any other president, I can't say, but certainly we know more about John F. Kennedy's private life than likely any other president, Clay?
I think so. Let me just say two quick things about that. Number one, we know now that he was desperately unhealthy. Addison's disease, colitis, irritable bowel syndrome, chronic back problems. And worse than that, he was being treated by Max Jacobson, Dr. Feelgood, in a way that is reminiscent of the way that Anna Nicole Smith or Michael Jackson have been treated by their doctors. This is a very bad deal that the President of the United States was as ill as he was and lied about it all of his life and was treated by a set of cocktails, pharmaceutical cocktails, that were not vetted by responsible doctors. And then, of course, there are the women. And I'll just give you this much. He said to Prime Minister Macmillan in Bermuda in 1961, and I quote, "If I don't have a woman every 2 or 3 days, I get violent headaches."
Mm-hmm.
And he did not mean the First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy.
No, he meant any woman.
He meant whatever woman was available. The Secret Service procured for him. Even his secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, procured for him. He was a reckless, runaway, outrageous womanizer. That's bad enough if it's someone like Bill Clinton. But he was sleeping with people that were in the mafia, people who were East German spies or possibly spies. His recklessness today would have him blackmailed and impeached. There was a kind of a gentleman's code not to talk about it. But it wasn't just preying on available women. It was preying on women who might have been spies or had ties to the mafia.
Clay Jenkinson, our guest on the Mike McFeely Show. If you have a question or comment on anything regarding John F. Kennedy or anything regarding North Dakota or anything regarding the world. Clay's a pretty smart cookie. He's a pretty bright guy, so he can probably give you a comment on whatever you want to talk about.
Lackey.
No, God, get out of town. 237-5948, 800-880-5346, kfgo.studio at kfgo.com is our email, or in today's very modern technological world, you can text message us. 35270 is the number. Please include the word Mike, so I know it's directed at me. And you can... We have reached the home stretch of the Mike McFeely Show on this Monday afternoon. Clay Jenkinson, our guest for the next couple of minutes. Clay, you know, I wanted to ask you, can people still come to the symposium? You know, we've been talking about the JFK thing, and you've been talking about how sold out it is and everything else. Can people still show up?
Yes, they can't get in for Clint Hill, although we do have some overflow space, and people who come will try to accommodate them in another space in the same building, which is the National Center, Center of Energy Excellence on the campus of Bismarck State. But for all of Wednesday and all of Thursday, people can still come. There's a registration fee. They can go to jfklegacy.org or BFC and just Google it in. But we can accommodate people all of Wednesday and all of Thursday. But Clint Hill, who's a North Dakotan from Washburn, is completely sold out.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Pete in Lisbon wants to talk about the Warren Commission. Go ahead, Pete.
Hello, just a quick, concise roundup of what the Warren Commission is, its scope. You know, is there smoking guns, do you think? And will we ever know the full extent of what they found out?
Okay, thank you, Pete.
That's a great question. I can't give a short answer, but I'll do one anyway. The Warren Commission was created by Lyndon Johnson in the aftermath of the assassination. It was led by Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren. It was an all-star cast, United States Senators, Congressman Gerald Ford, etc. Arlen Specter, who went on to be the senator from Pennsylvania, was one of the young hothead lawyers who handled it. They did a very interesting and remarkable job, but we now know they were lied to by the FBI, they were lied to by the CIA. Those two agencies are two top intelligence agencies. Both not only lied to the Warren Commission, but withheld important information from them. And there are those, Mike, as you know, who believe the Warren Commission did a whitewash to create the national narrative of the lone nut.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new book on this subject that I'm reading right now by a man named Shannon. And I don't think that it was just a whitewash. I think they did due diligence trying to do the right job, but they didn't investigate every possible lead, that's for sure.
Well, the Warren Commission came up with the single bullet theory.
That was Specter, Arlen Specter.
Right. The bullet went through Kennedy's back, through his neck, went into Governor John Connally of Texas, went 17 different directions and through 41 articles of clothing before falling out of Governor Connally on the gurney in Parkland Hospital in Dallas.
Which, yeah, it gets worse. It went through 9 layers of skin, and it broke the 5th rib of Governor Connally and went through bones in his wrist and wound up in his thigh, according to Arlen Specter. And when they found the so-called bullet, it's Exhibit 399 in the Warren Commission, it's almost entirely intact.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
Nobody believes, nobody who is a hunter or who has actually done forensics believes that a bullet can go through 9 layers of skin and shatter 2 bones and be essentially intact.
And Governor Connally himself said that's garbage.
Connally said
that
it was
happen.
The first bullet hit Kennedy in the throat or the back, whichever, and the second bullet said Nellie Connally and her husband John, both of whom were in the car, hit him. So he believed, and he was conscious for the third bullet. So they went to their grave swearing that there was not a magic bullet. Now, they could be wrong. People misremember things, but that's what they said.
Very quickly, Clay, will we ever truly find out definitively who killed Kennedy?
The answer to that is no, and I want to deny rumors that you were on the grassy knoll.
Well, as I said earlier today, I was not even a glimmer in my father's eye on November 2nd, 1963, so I know it can't be me. And I trust it's not you, so that leaves another
7,999,000. I think Lee Harvey Oswald was involved. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Clay, thank you. Great stuff.
I'll see you next week.
Yep, you bet. Have a great time at the JFK Symposium.